ID people on the street with an iPhone facial recognition software and a Facebook photo. But what if criminals use it to ID the cops? I'm Dr. Catherine Albrecht, and I'll be right back to talk about the end of the undercover detective.
Privacy is under attack. When you give up data about yourself, you'll never get it back again. And once your privacy is gone, you'll find your freedoms will start to vanish too. So protect your rights, say no to surveillance, and keep your information to yourself. Privacy, it's worth hanging on to. This public service announcement is brought to you by StartPage.com, the private search engine alternative to Google, Yahoo, and Bing. Start over with StartPage.
Social media can mean a pink slip for employees who've had unflattering snapshots of themselves turn up on the internet. But what if your livelihood depended on being anonymous? What if you were, say, an undercover agent? The Australian police is concerned that social media may be undermining covert operations. A survey found that 90% of female officers and 80% of male cops were using Facebook and Twitter. All respondents 26 and younger were exposed by uploading their photos to those websites. I guess this means aspiring cops need to take a cue from today's politicians and keep their photos off the web. I'm Dr. Catherine Albrecht. More news and information at CatherineAlbrecht.com. We've all seen movies where the bad guys plant a bug in someone's office. But what if the government secretly bugged thousands of innocent people? I'm Dr. Catherine Albrecht, and I'll be back in a moment to tell you where it actually happened.
Privacy is under attack. When you give up data about yourself, you'll never get it back again. And once your privacy is gone, you'll find your freedoms will start to vanish too. So protect your rights, say no to surveillance, and keep your information to yourself. Privacy, it's worth hanging on to. This public service announcement is brought to you by StartPage.com, the private search engine alternative to Google, Yahoo, and Bing. Start over with StartPage.
It's the toll transponder from hell. You know the easy pass people stick on their windshields to pay for tolls? Here in the U.S., they track each time you pass through a toll booth, and that's pretty bad. But it's nothing compared to what they did in China. According to a Hong Kong newspaper, the Chinese government secretly hid powerful listening devices in the windshield transponders issued to Chinese drivers. Experts say the devices could pick up conversations and transmit them miles away to government authorities. Thousands of innocent people are believed to have been spied on in this way since 2007. Talk about a Trojan horse, or a Chinese one. I'm Dr. Catherine Albrecht. More news and information at CatherineAlbrecht.com.
Looking for some truth? You found it. LogosRadioNetwork.com.
Misinformation, deception, deceit, spin, untruths, half-truths, lies, you know the truth. Looking for something different? Visit Truth News Radio Australia, www.truthnews.com.
Folks, it's Josh Jackson here. You're listening to Truth News Radio Australia, across Australia and across the world, all the way through the amazing spanses of our lovely friends over in America. Today, we have a wonderful interview with a guy named Stefan Molyneux. I had to pre-record this because we're over in Australia and we couldn't get the times quite right for the live show. But he's a fascinating guy, and so without further ado, we'll launch into the pre-record of that, and see what you think. Here we go. And welcome back to Truth News Radio Australia. On the line today, I thought I would get someone, because I often see the news, I see the problems in the world, and we're constantly bombarded with problems. And I remember years about 5 years ago, I thought there has to be answers. You know, I'm sick of seeing the problems. I'd love to see some answers. And I came across Stefan Molyneux, who is a writer, entrepreneur, playwright, actor, and most of all, a philosopher, an amazing one at that. And he's on the line right now. Stefan, are you there?
I am. And an exceedingly long line it is. I've actually never been to Australia. I lived in South Africa for a bit, and I know that Australians get quite annoyed when confused with South Africans. But I feel that with my daughter, I've watched enough Wiggles that I should really be an honorary citizen, and I assume that the passport is really just on its way.
If you can do that, you're home.
Because it used to be, you guys used to have, you know, Australian men were considered to be fairly macho, you know, in the Crocodile Dundee days. But now you have the four dancing Star Trek extras who are actually very good with kids. It seems to have taken a bit of a turn towards a slightly fruitier side. But that's all right.
I have a lot of people that come over to Sydney and they can't believe it's just like the gay capital of the world. You know, everyone thinks it's all macho and Crocodile Dundee with huge knives. And they get here and it's just a... massive gay pride floats everywhere.
It's, I guess, more butch than macho has become the phrase of the gay.
Oh, good. And look, hopefully in the future there won't be any of these borders, so we can all be world, earthlings as such.
Well, you know, it's something that I guess we're just getting as a species old enough to forget. Just how new all of this ridiculous passport stuff is. You know, it's really less than 100 years old. It was one of the things that came out of the First World War, as so many of the, you know, back breakings of human liberty came out of the First World War. I mean, you know, 100 years ago, there were no passports. There was, you know, maybe you'd have to get a bit of quarantine if you were coughing up a lung when you stepped off the ship. But for the most part, you could just go work anywhere, do whatever you want. And then, of course, what happens is everyone gets into the promised land and the first thing they want to do is start raising the drawbridge. So everybody swarms to America or to Australia, I guess a little more voluntarily for America, at least for some people. And then the first thing they do is, well, now we've got to stop other people from coming in because we're here and it's great. So let's raise the drawbridge.
And in Australia, we have this amazing thing where everyone's saying, like, all these politicians are like, stop the boats. And they're obsessed with boat people. Yet all the Australians came across on boats from England originally into Aboriginal Australian territory. And, it's kind of a mixture of language there that...
Well, and of all of the people you'd want to come to your country, I think boat people would be number one on the list. I mean, is there a more motivated, courageous, intrepid, brave group of people? I mean, these are not people who are going to brave the high seas and sharks and dehydration and sunburn and then come and say, well, we're just going to go on welfare. These are going to be the hardest working, most grateful, most nationalistic, most loyal, most enthusiastic citizens. In fact, if we really wanted to make the world a better place, we would just send everyone to everyone else's country on leaky boats for a couple of months. And whenever you got to land, you'd be so grateful to be wherever you were that you just work hard and be happy all the rest of your life. That's my plan for world happiness.
I think you'd be kissing the ground harder than the Pope.
Oh, yeah.
You'd be
cashing
the ground, I think. But, look, one thing that I liked about you, Steph, is the comedy is fantastic, but B, the answers that were coming out from your channel on YouTube and your radio show on freedomainradio.com, and... every time I listened to it, I would be blown away because I would really start to think, wow, you know, there's some answers here and this is fantastic. And the problem is I've now sort of gained this name of this anarcho-capitalist, right, because I've fallen in love with the concept and the philosophy. But, you know, there's two things that I hated in this society. One is capitalism and the other thing is anarchism. You know, people hate those two words to an old school anarchist meetup without being hated on, you know.
Yeah.
And so it's a really hard position.
Well, and if you throw atheism in there, then you might as well have sprouted, you know, two horns and be walking around and smoking hot assless chaps at a Republican national convention. So it is a real challenge. But, you know, my hope is that, you know, way back in the day, like hundreds of years ago, there was a movement called abolitionism, which I'm sure you're familiar with, which was getting rid of slavery. And now you and I are both anti-slavery. just about everyone you meet is anti-slavery, but there's no such thing as being called an abolitionist anymore because it's the generally accepted position. You only have to name it when it's not the generally accepted position. You know, there's not a lot of people who, when they write in the newspaper or go on TV, they have to really, really stress that they're pro-democracy and that they're anti-slavery, because those are just that's what you assume. Everybody's that way. And so the only reason we have a label is because the truth of what we're talking about has not been accepted by the majority of people yet. And I can sort of understand why. It's a difficult thing to accept. Certainly took me a long time. But yeah, so once we become the mainstream position, we won't be called labeled. We won't be labeled with anything. We'll just be like generally decent, thoughtful, moral human beings. And that will be the generally accepted position.
Exactly. And it's almost this sort of naming and categorizing thing. It's an interesting, like for instance, with global warming, you're a denialist all of a sudden. Global warming denial, and these sort of categories that quickly, when really, well, you know, I just, you're not really a denialist, and because...
And you look, they may be correct. But the thing that makes me suspicious about it is that after scaring the living crap out of man, woman, and child for, I don't know, 40 years. I mean, I'm 45, right? So I remember all of the panics and scares. There was global cooling. There was global warming. There was you know, razor blades in the candy. There was acid rain. There was the holes in the ozone layer. There were endless amounts of environmental catastrophes that were occurring. And now there's another one. And I would be very respectful of the position of the global warming crew and the scientists if they said, well, here's the number of times we cried wolf before, and here's why we were wrong, and here's the steps we put in place to make sure that we don't just become needlessly alarmist again. But they don't. They just keep moving on to the next scare, the next panic, with no reference to the fact that they've been wrong about oil, about food, about energy, about water, about, you know, everything that you could name. We're still doing fine. And so once they start to say, you know, we really made some mistakes before, here's what we've put in place. We know we don't have much credibility coming and, you know, sounding off the klaxon alarms of environmental destruction that is imminent. We know we don't have much credibility, but they don't. They just keep moving on with the next panic with no reference to the prior one. That's what makes me believe it's just an unholy scam. But, you know, again, I'm no scientist. They could be right. But, boy, they really don't have much credibility based on the way they're handling their prior disasters. No, yeah. It's just vanished, gone down the memory hole. Just, it's gone. You know what? And they don't even circle back and say, well, what? Sorry, I don't know why I'm getting so squeaky. I don't even circle back and say, well, what the hell happened there? You know, I mean, if you keep crying wolf, you know, talking Australia. I mean, if you keep crying wolf, at some point, you've got to acknowledge that you keep crying wolf. And if you kind of do it one more time, you've got to at least acknowledge it. Otherwise, it's just a load of crap anyway.
So let's bring it back to what is your mainstay, your and that is anarcho-capitalism. Now, how did you get to this point, Steph? Like, when did you wake up one morning and think, you know, I don't want any government, not even a smidgen,
It was a long, embarrassingly hard road for me. I fought it tooth and nail. I mean, I sort of grew up, I think, like a lot of people who come to philosophy and to liberty. I grew up as a good, staunch, Rand-saluting objectivist, and I tried to square that circle for a ridiculous amount of time. You know, taxation can be voluntary. Rape can be consensual. You know, it doesn't make any sense, right? I mean, something's either an initiation of force or it's not. And I just kept working at this and kept working at this. And then I was having a debate with a colleague. I used to be a software executive. I was having a debate with a colleague about environmentalism. And it just sort of came to me that there's ways to organize things far better without the state. And we don't have to bore everyone with the details. The articles are all available on my website. But it was like a big poof. And I also used to listen to this American thinker, Harry Brown. He had a radio show. He passed away a few years ago. And he was just hammering some point about, you know, people running to the government to protect them from big capital interests and, you know, Goldman Sachs and whatever. And he was just hammering the point, the government cannot protect you from this. It cannot protect you from that. And suddenly it all just sort of came together. And I began working with the idea of consistency. You know, consistency is really, really difficult in philosophy. And it's not difficult logically. It's just difficult emotionally because you feel like you have these anchor points that culture gives you. You know, like, well, you need a government. It's just that it's kind of gotten too big and too intrusive. And so, you know, the Randian approach is, you know, you got to have a government for the law courts and the prisons and the military and police and so on. But that's it. And so you say, okay, so, but then they say, well, you should never initiate the use of force against another human being. And I've debated tons of objectivists about this, and they cannot square that circle. And libertarians cannot square that circle. If you cannot initiate force against another human being, which is a moral rule that we all accept in our private lives, I mean, I don't go to the grocery store and stick it up. I don't get a job by trying to kidnap somebody's children, put them in the trunk of my car. And so we all accept that. You can't initiate force. Well, but yeah, see, but then we create these magical exceptions. And we don't create them out of a logical standpoint, out of a logical necessity. We create them, I believe, because these things are already here. They always have been here, and it's really, really hard to change them. And so what we do is we just say, okay, I'm just going to create a little exception here, just a little exception. So now you can initiate force to, I don't know, let's see, police. Well, I don't really know how we're going to get police without a state. So, okay, I'll make an exception for that. Oh, national defense. Well, that's a real bitch and a half. So let's just create an exception for national defense. And then, oh, court system, boy, private courts, that would be really tough. So, okay. And
we're just going to pause there before we go into an ad break. Sorry about the sound quality there. It was recorded over Skype at a wee hours of the day, but it should be all right. You're listening to Truth News Radio Australia with an interview with Stefan Molyneux of freedomainradio.com about getting rid of the state altogether and how that might work. How would things run? Anyway, we'll continue the interview after the break.
One is a serial hypocrite who lobbied for Freddie Mac before the housing crisis and for the individual mandate before Obamacare. Another, a counterfeit conservative who opposes right to work, massively increased spending, and funded Planned Parenthood. Finally, a flip-flopper who's been on all sides, supported TARP bailouts, and provided the blueprint for Obamacare. Three men. One vision, more big government, more mandates, less freedom. One man stands apart, ready to deliver real change, voting against every tax increase and every unbalanced budget every time. A real plan to cut $1 trillion year one and to balance the budget in three. Pro-life, pro-right to work, guided by faith and principle. Ron Paul, the one who will restore America now.
I'm Ron Paul, and I approve this message.
Are you being harassed by debt collectors with phone calls, letters, or even lawsuits? Stop debt collectors now with the Michael Maris Proven Method. Michael Maris has won 6 cases in federal court against debt collectors, and now you can win too. You'll get step-by-step instructions in plain English on how to win in court using federal civil rights statutes, what to do when contacted by phone, mail, or court summons, how to answer letters and phone calls, how to get debt collectors out of your credit report, how to turn the financial tables on them and make them pay you to go away. The Michael Maris Proven Method is the solution for how to stop debt collectors. Personal consultation is available as well. For more information, please visit ruleoflawradio.com and click on the blue Michael Maris banner or email michaelmaris@yahoo.com. That's ruleoflawradio.com or email michaelmiras@yahoo.com to learn how to stop debt collectors now.
Radio Australia. You're listening to an interview I did with Stefan Molyneux, a philosopher and a thinker about how society would work without a state whatsoever. And I know a lot of us minarchists who believe in a very small government. And he is a man who has taken it to the next level to say, hey, well, how would private police and private courts and private law work? And there's quite an interesting chap. I'm sorry again for some of the sound quality is a little bit shoddy in the interview, but we'll just have to go with it. So here's a continuing with the interview.
And libertarians cannot square that circle. If you cannot initiate force against another human being, which is a moral rule that we all accept in our private lives, I mean, I don't go to the grocery store and stick it up. I don't get a job by trying to kidnap somebody's children, put them in the trunk of my car. And so we all accept that. You can't initiate force. Well, but yeah, see, but then we create these magical exceptions. And we don't create them out of a logical standpoint, out of a logical necessity. We create them, I believe, because these things are already here. They always have been here. And it's really, really hard to change them. And so what we do is we just say, okay, I'm just going to create a little exception here. Just a little exception. So now you can initiate force to, I don't know, let's see, police. Well, I don't really know how we're going to get police without a state. So, okay, I'll make an exception for that. Oh, national defense. Well, that's a real bitch and a half. So let's just create an exception for national defense. And then, oh, court system, boy, private courts, that would be really tough. So, okay. And the problem is that every time you create an exception, you're just handing more and more weapons to people who want to use force. I mean, it's like in the Constitution, they say, well, Congress can't do this and it can't do this, but it can regulate interstate commerce. And then you create this thin edge of the wedge that people have just used to, you know, now you can't even grow certain vegetables in your backyard because you might take them across state lines to sell them somewhere else. And therefore once you create exceptions, you've just destroyed the principle. And then why not just go with the flow? So sorry, I've interrupted you a few times. Please go on.
You know, I sometimes think, is it that we have evolved like that in that train of thought, or are we just lazy as a species and just sort of say, oh, look, that someone needs to put a law against that? Or
there is a certain laziness. I mean, to me, the state is to social functioning as religion is to science. You know, so in the dawn of our species, we basically started to think. There's a great old story about when the first Christian missionaries went to England and talked to the Anglo-Saxons back in the day and began to talk to them about life after death and going to heaven and hell and so on. And one of the old warlords said, you know, we kind of just thought that life was like a bird. You know, we've got these huts and we've got windows on either side, and a bird would just sort of fly in through one window, fly through the hut, and then fly out. We never thought what was outside the hut. And now the Christians have come, we're starting to think about what's after life, and maybe there was something before life. We were starting to think outside the hut. And so when we began to ask these questions, we didn't know where the lightning came from. We didn't know what happened when we died. We didn't know where the world came from. We didn't know what the sun was or where life came from and so on. And so people had anxiety about these answers, and so they would make up something. God did it, which, of course, you know, philosophically, it doesn't answer anything, right? Say, where did human beings come from? Well, God made them. Well, okay, some incomprehensible being in some unknowable realm for some unfathomable purpose created human beings in some way that we will never be able to understand. It's like, that's not really an answer. I mean, you have to sort of really wait and be patient for a science and all that to come along. So we have this anxiety about not having answers, and then to quell our anxiety, we make up answers as if they're real. And the same thing with the state. How would society be organized in the absence of a centralized, coercive entity called the state, which is an incredibly dangerous thing to have, as we can all see with debts and wars. Like, governments killed 250 million people last century. And this is not even including war. That is just killing their own citizens through starvation, through gulags, through, I mean, just outright murder. Add in war.
Day, amazing. Yeah. 250 million people or something like that. And private murders were estimated around 8.5 million.
Yes, and this includes murders that, you know, the government keeps you in poverty, that makes you more likely to have murder. The government bans drugs, that makes you more likely for there to be murder. The government makes gambling and prostitution illegal, that raises the murder rate. So it probably would be way lower than that, probably even a tenth of that. So we're comparing 250 million deaths, for sure, versus, you know, 1 million deaths or a couple of million deaths through private murders. Any rational human being would look at that and say, well, the real danger there is not private citizens murdering each other, but governments murdering their own citizens. And if you count debt, I mean, we got this crazy idea. We create this government. We create these governments. Why? Well, to protect us from theft. And then we give them the right to impose taxes. In other words, to take our property at will. And there's no practical limitation. But what do people do when the government raises taxes? They just pay it. I mean, what are you going to do, right? And so to protect ourselves from theft, we create an institution that has the legal right to take from us at will. And to protect ourselves from unjust contracts, we create a social agency that can sell off our children to the highest bidding foreigners for the sake of paying off the donators and dependents in the here and now. I mean, it makes no sense logically, but it's what we know. It's what we're used to. And trying to overturn it seems so unfathomable. I mean, there's definitely ways to do it, but trying to overturn this unjust monstrosity of violence seems so incomprehensible that it's like, yeah, okay, well, I guess this is a good way of doing things. But then, of course, people don't think about the old, so they think, okay, well, we've got to have some armed rebellion to get rid of the state. That's nonsense. Never going to work. And impractical is just suicide. Or they say, we've got to try and go within the political system and vote people in who are going to reduce the size and power of the state, which I think is to misunderstand the whole purpose. You don't join a violent organization to turn it into a charity. I mean, if you could do that, then you should go join the local mafia and turn them into the United Way. But people recognize that you can't do that because that's not the point of a violent organization. So there are other alternatives, but I think it's just that's what we're used to. It's such a monolithic thing to overturn that people just justify it after the fact and pretend that's philosophy.
Let's take a step back here for a second. You said that that government is violence, and mm-hmm. So, you know, a lot of people say, well, what do you mean by that? Of course it's not. But in terms of things like taxation or a new law being passed saying that you get a fine for not wearing a helmet when riding your pushbike, mm-hmm. How are these things violence?
Well, okay, let's take the example of taxation. Let's say that the government raises your tax rates by 5%. And let's say that you don't pay it. Let's say you pay the old rate. What happens?
Well, I guess I'd get a friendly little letter from my accountant at first saying, hey, where's the rest? You better pay it. And then I'd get a letter from the state. Probably from the taxation office. That letter would then, if I continue to not respond, I guess I'd get an even stronger letter.
And you would also get penalties and interest and other. It would escalate, right? The amount of money you would have to pay would continue to rise pretty steeply.
That's right. I would start getting pretty stressed out in my life. Probably my family life would suffer from the stress. Then I would eventually the police would come on, I'm guessing.
Well, you would get a letter to probably appear for a court date. They may garnish you your wages if they could, which, of course, would just be, you know, and then if you decided to get paid under the table or get paid in cash, and right, that's, if you continue to evade, then eventually, yeah, right, the police would come to you. If you didn't show up for your court date or whatever, then, yeah, the police would come to your house, and they would have guns. And if you pretended that it was Halloween and they were just invaders in blue costumes and you pulled a gun on them, they would shoot you. But that's what it all comes down to.
And just did everything in my power to keep them out. Eventually, yeah, they would.
They've done this in the U.S. to the Browns, this couple that didn't like the income tax. They surround you. I mean, it's better than it used to be. They don't just sort of kick your door in and gun you down. They will surround you. They will cut off your electricity. They will cut off your water, and they will try and starve you out. Certainly it is definitely coercive. You just have to think. I mean, we can understand this emotionally, right? So do you ever get those calls from like telemarketers who want to sell you stuff?
I love them.
That's the problem. Yeah, but so you call them, and what do? You say, listen, I want to get off this list. Please don't call me, especially during dinner time. This is very rude, and I don't appreciate it. And you hang up on them, right? Well, imagine you get a call from your local government tax collection agency, and you say, listen, I didn't vote for this. I didn't sign any social contract. I really don't appreciate being bothered during my dinner, and don't call me again. Click. Would you have a different emotional reaction to being called by your tax office than some telemarketer? Of course.
We're just going to pause it there. You're listening to Truth News Radio Australia. I'm Joshua Jackson. You're listening to a pre-record I did with Stefan Molyneux of Free Domain Radio, a philosopher and a narco-capitalist. Sorry about the sound quality, but it's a quite an interesting conversation. Anyway, we'll listen to the rest of it after the break.
A Noble Lie, Oklahoma City, 1995, will change forever the way you look at the true nature of terrorism.
Based on the damage pattern to the building, what the government says is impossible.
The grand jury did not want to hear anything I had to say.
The decision was made not to pursue any more of those individuals.
Some of these columns were ripped up, shredded, tossed around.
The people that did the things they did knew doggone well what they were doing.
Expose the cover-up now at anoblelie.com.
HempUSA.org has a revolutionary wonder food for detoxing the body and rebuilding the immune system.
Microplant powder can help unclog arteries and soften heart valves while removing heavy metals, virus, fungus, bacteria, and parasites. Plus, it cleans and purifies the blood, lungs, stomach, and colon. Keep your body clean with microplant powder. Visit us at HempUSA.org or call 908-691-2608 today.
Attention listeners, Harlan Dietrich, owner of Brave New Books, here with a special announcement. According to the Southern Poverty Law Center's new report titled The Year in Hate and Extremism, in the past 3 years, the number of patriot groups has grown by 755%. Once again, making the list, Brave New Books. Also, congratulations to Austin's own ruleoflawradio.com for joining the ranks of the SPLC's favorite patriots. And shout out to Deborah Medina's We Texans for making the list as well. In order to show our appreciation for helping keep the bookstore on the front lines of the battle for liberty, for the whole month of April, mention this ad and we'll take 5% off everything in the store. That's right, you can get 5% off the latest in extremist materials. Get your Ron Paul yard signs or shirts, one of the last copies of the Oklahoma City bombing's final report, or Charlotte Iserby's deliberate dumbing down of America. So come on down and help further the rise of the patriot movement.
The bookstore is located at 1904 Guadalupe Street. 5% discount excludes precious metal sales.
Are you getting fed up with all the disinformation, deception, spin, propaganda, half-truths, and downright lies in mainstream news? Looking for something different? Visit Truth News Radio Australia, www.truthnews.com.au, and may the truth set you free.
G'day folks, you're listening to Josh Jackson from Truth News Radio Australia, all the way from Down Under. We're listening to an interview I recorded with Stefan Molyneux of freedomainradio.com, a philosopher of a market anarchism or free market freedom, there's a whole heap of other names for it, voluntarism, anarcho-capitalism, these sort of things. And basically what it means is how a government or how a society would run without a coercive monopoly on force, which is what we employ government to do, and how society would work in that way. Anyway, without further ado, I'll continue the conversation. We left it off with Stefan explaining how government isn't voluntary.
Telemarketer is rude. It's still a voluntary interaction, but the government is not.
Yeah. Yeah, it sure is. And for little petty things as well, so any law folks comes to that final conclusion that if you don't agree with that law, then the police are going to come and arrest you. Now, a lot of people, when I bring this up, say, well, yeah, but, you know, what if you have a big, you know, and you always get these amazing things that people conjure up. I've had one guy going, oh, yeah, but what if you have some guy that's just loves cutting off people's heads and then goes rampaging cutting off people's heads? Around and I you sort of go, what? But anyway,
yeah, no, let's deal with these are all good questions, and I don't mind crazy objections, because for many people it's a crazy proposition. It's like if you say let's live without the government, you're basically, I think people, think that you're saying, let's wear no pants and repeal gravity. That's my plan. And we'll all wear beanie caps with propellers to get around. I mean, it sounds crazy. So I understand that people have, you know, massive amounts of skepticism. I mean, before we got rid of slavery, slavery was considered to be, well, that's human nature. Every country, every civilization has had slaves. So if you want to talk about getting rid of slavery, what you're saying is, what, are the crops going to pick themselves? You're saying we should all starve to death? I mean, if you've got to have slaves. Yeah. Right. So a guy, so psycho killer, right? So there's some psycho killer who's, well, no, see, now this is something I get nagged about a lot, and I think rightly so. See, the word government is used in two ways, right? So, so people use the word government to mean the sort of formal legal monopoly on force called the state. But government can also mean, you know, it's a well-governed group. I govern myself well. I mean, in other words, having structure and rules. Now, what's really tricky about the concept of voluntarism or anarchy or stateless society, whatever, what's really tricky about it is to recognize that everything which is traditionally ascribed to anarchy is actually a description of the current state of affairs, literally. Whereas everything that is imagined to result from government will actually result from anarchy. This is really tricky for people. So I'll give you sort of a very brief example. So people say, well, what about psycho killers who want to run around, you know, grabbing people, kidnapping them, and throwing them in their basement? It's like, have you ever heard of drug laws? What do you think is happening with the government right now? I mean, peaceful people who have the wrong bits of vegetation in their pocket, they might as well have misallocated their salad ration, are grabbed, thrown into vans, and locked in prison. The U.S., of course, has the highest. I mean, in the U.S., The per capita prison population is about equivalent to the Gulag population under Stalin. It's far higher than all of the totalitarian dictatorships that the U.S. was supposedly opposing in the Cold War, like China and so on. I mean, it's brutal. So people say, what if there are these psycho killers who just want to go around killing people? Well, okay, so let's say there is some guy. Well, first of all, in a stateless society, there would be no formal laws against having a weapon to protect yourself. So this guy would just be shot by someone pretty quickly. Whereas right now, if you have some psycho killer who wants to go around killing people, what does he do? Well, he damn well declares war on a country like Iraq for no purpose, no reason, no moral justification, and then a million people get killed. So the first thing you do with a psycho killer is don't give him a goddamn army, because that's where they want to go. If you want to go and do damage to people, you go to the government. You don't go to the crime. You don't go to the mafia. If you really want to hurt people, if you really want to control people, if you really want to do your evil, you go to the state. I mean, how is it possibly the responsibility of, you know, these poor benighted Iraqis who suffered under a dictatorship that was armed and funded and put in place by the U.S., how on earth is it morally justified to blow them up for a dictatorship imposed by the U.S. when they posed no threat whatsoever to the U.S. in any conceivable situation? So if you're really worried about people using violence to hurt other people, the first place you should look, 250 million deaths versus 9 million deaths, the first place you look is the state. And you don't imagine that you solve the problem of violence by creating a monopoly of force. I mean, that's like solving a migraine with a guillotine. Well, I guess the problem is solved, but you know, nobody's better off.
So what about, you know, the second question I always get is, you know, okay, well, if I have some sort of private police force to look after me and another person has a private police force, then the guy that's richer and can afford a bigger police force is just going to ride on through the town and take over.
Well, that's interesting. Yeah. No. It's a fair question. What's interesting about that, of course, is that people are then immediately saying that the governments are bad. Because if the worst conceivable situation they can see arising from a state of anarchy is for the government to come back, that's not exactly a lot of praise for the government that we have. You just understand? I mean, it's like, oh my God, it could be so terrible. We might end up with another government. It's like, well, then you're kind of saying, anyway, I just want to point that out.
And I love that point. I just think it's so, and it fits into so many arguments that, and then what a lot of people come back with was, well, we need a tiny little one and keep control of it, keep looping it, keep it in its little pen.
Right. Well, okay, but let's talk about a few things that, for sure will be nobody knows the details of a free society. I mean, and fundamentally, we don't free ourselves from violence because we can predict what happens afterwards. We free ourselves from violence because violence is immoral, because the initiation of force is an evil action. That's why we do. I mean, you don't free slaves because you say, well, down the road, see, 100 years from now, this is how it's going to work. You're going to have these giant machines that run on kind of wheels or cogs or caterpillar tracks. There's no horses to pull them. And they get their energy from the crushed dinosaur tree juice from millions of years ago that's sucked out from the ground in tubes, refined in deserts, shipped on these giant tankers across the sea. And that's how we're going to get our food. People would look at you like, I don't know what you're smoking, man, but can you break me off a tube? Because that just sounds really good, right? You're a wishburn, right? But this is, you would actually be right if you made that case, but nobody can predict what's going to happen. There are certain trends that you can predict, but we end slavery because slavery is immoral. We don't end slavery because it will make farming more efficient. I mean, it does, of course, right? I mean, the turn of the century, last century in America, sorry to use American examples, but, 75% of people were involved in farming. 100 years later, it's 3% because you've got machines. And the reason you have machines is you don't have slaves. So you have to find some other way to be efficient. I mean, why was there no industrial revolution in ancient Greece and ancient Rome? Because they had slaves. And so people who have slaves are not interested in labor-saving devices because they've just invested in a whole bunch of labor in the form of slaves. So you have to pay people so that you can measure the value of investing in capital, which reduces labor. Anyway, So you kind of need to get rid of slavery, and then you end up with this amazing capitalist, fantastic free market system where you and I can talk like this, and you've got people, machines that can peer inside people's brains to find tumors, and I mean, all this amazing stuff that goes on in the world. That happened because we got rid of slavery. You can't predict it, but doing the right thing leads to good consequences. I want to point out that we don't know what's going to happen when we get rid of this centralized coercive agency called the state. And it doesn't matter. We get rid of it because it's the wrong thing to do. But even if we sort of want to peer over the hill, right, peer through our crystal ball, we know some things for sure about when voluntarism replaces violence as social organization. First and foremost, the thing you would buy is insurance. I mean, that insurance used to be the way that people dealt with these kinds of problems, but it's largely been displaced by the welfare state and Social Security and, you know, all this sort of crap. So you'd buy insurance. So you'd say, look, I'm going to insure my house. And if someone steals, then my insurance company is going to replace stuff. And then you create an agency that makes money off preventing crime. And that's something that's incomprehensible to us at the moment, because right now the government does not make any money from preventing crime. And you would have a healthcare system where doctors would make money from you not being sick. Right now they make money from you being sick. So in California, for instance, 4% of the government's budget is for prevention, 96% is for just firing people up with pills. And so you would have a system where the investment that would be there in social problems would all be about prevention rather than cure. The best way to prevent social dysfunction is to raise children peacefully and without violence and without, you know, drug addicted, divorced, crazy ass parents, right? And so we would have a society that would really invest in the proper raising of children. Right now, this is really not the case. There are obviously individual parents who do a great job, but society as a whole doesn't fundamentally profit from the good raising of children. So if you look at let's say that you were going to sign up with some agency that was going to protect you and whatever, right? And let's say that, so you'd be worried about some guy who would then, I don't know what, buy a big giant defense agency and arm it to the teeth with laser guided shark nipples or something. And then that would be the way that you would have, but you would be worried about that. And so the first thing that any company that was going to sell you services would have to do is to address in an entrepreneurial, voluntary sales way, address that concern of yours and say, look, I don't know how we would do it, but it would be something like this. So if I,
We're just going to leave it there for a second. You're listening to Truth News Radio Australia. I'm Joshua Jackson, and we are listening to Stefan Molyneux about a totally free society. We'll be after the break. We'll be back.
The Oklahoma City bombing. Top 10 reasons to question the official story. Reason number 2, why was the ATF AWOL? Paramedic Tiffany Bible, who was on the scene within 5 minutes, has stated in an affidavit that agents of the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms told her that they were not in their office that morning. EMT Catherine Mallett also overheard one agent say to another, quote, "Is that why we got the page to not come in today?" End quote. Bruce Shaw, as interviewed on KFOR-TV, was also told by ATF agents that they had been paged to not come into work. The ATF initially denied these claims and now variously claim that one of their agents was in a free-falling elevator, which has been disproven, or that they had been in an all-night stakeout, or that they had been at a golf tournament. As they try to sort out their lies, all we want to know is, did the ATF receive a warning, and if so, why did they not pass it on to others in the Murrah Bubble? For more information, go to OKCBombingTruth.com.
Are you the plaintiff or defendant in a lawsuit? Win your case without an attorney with JurisDictionary, the affordable, easy-to-understand 4-CD course that will show you how in 24 hours, step by step. If you have a lawyer, know what your lawyer should be doing. If you don't have a lawyer, know what you should do for yourself. Thousands have won with our step-by-step course, and now you can too. JurisDictionary was created by a licensed attorney with 22 years of case-winning experience. Even if you're not in a lawsuit, you can learn what everyone should understand about the principles and practices that control our American courts. You'll receive our audio classroom, video seminar, tutorials, forms for civil cases, pro se tactics, and much more. Please visit ruleoflawradio.com and click on the banner or call toll-free 866-LAW-EASY.
Radio Australia, coming to you all the way from Down Under, Australia. Right now, we're listening to a pre-recorded interview I did, a quite crackly interview, I might add. And sometimes my voice tends to cut out for some reason on this interview, but it's still a fascinating discovery tour of how and what would happen if we decided to, look, the government is just too violent and ridiculous. Let's just try to do everything privately with private interactions peacefully. And it's quite an interesting thought exercise. Anyway, we'll get back to Stéphane Molyneux.
Let's say that you were going to sign up with some agency that was going to protect you and whatever, right? And let's say that, so you'd be worried about some guy who would then, I don't know what, buy a big giant defense agency and arm it to the teeth with laser guided shark nipples or something. And then that would be the way that you would have, but you would be worried about that. And so the first thing that any company that was going to sell you services would have to do is to address in an entrepreneurial, voluntary sales way, address that concern of yours and say, look, I don't know how we would do it, but it would be something like this. So if I wanted to join some police defense company that would protect my property or whatever, and of course I wouldn't really need much protection because there wouldn't be a state to take half my property. But what I would do is I would say, look, I don't want to join your company because I'm worried that you're going to get some major shareholder that's going to turn you into a government. And so the company would have to address that. And there'd be like 20 companies competing to address that issue. So if I used to be an entrepreneur, so I'm kind of used to these kinds of questions. So what I would say is, okay, listen, the way it's going to work is, we never let any customer pay more than 0.1% of our budget, ever, ever, because we're worried about that too. We don't want another government because we're a defense agency. We're a protection agency. If another government comes along, we're out of business. And we spent 20, 30 years growing this business, and we don't want some government to come along and take it away. And so we put all of these safeguards.
But just tax people by force and create a massive...
And so they don't want a government to come in even more than you don't want a government, because if you get a government come in, you lose half your income. But if the government comes in for them, they lose all their income and all of their investments and all that, right? So they would put in all these safeguards, and they would say, look, we've got five independent auditors who each receive $100 million if they ever find that we've ever allowed any customer to pay more than 0.1% of our budget. And so we spread out all the risk. We make sure that nobody ever gets the predominance, and none of our shareholders can ever own more than 1% of the company, and blah, blah, whatever it is. I have no idea what the final solution will be. But there will be 20 or 30 brilliant guys trying to solve this problem for you to your satisfaction. Yeah, I mean, this is everyone who has a fear. I mean, what I try and do is I try and turn it around and say, okay, I'm the skeptical customer. You're the defense agency. You tell me how you're going to allay my fears. Because if you can't allay my fears, I'm going to go down the road to the next guy and see if he can. And whoever allays the most people's fears is going to get the business, right? Well, I mean, have they heard of a GPS? I mean, the technology now is such that you obviously could drive wherever you want and just be billed for wherever you drive, and you wouldn't need to have any tolls because they would just track where you drive. I mean, that's easy, right? The GPS thing has solved the problem of how to pay for roads. But the other question that I would have is, we don't know what roads would look like in the absence of state coercion, because it is state coercion that has built all of the roads that we see. And so how do we know? It's like saying, well, we have to, you know, once we get rid of the slaves, we have to hire everyone, you know, at $10 an hour to pick the cotton or to pick the fruit or whatever that the slaves formerly did for free. And that's going to make food so expensive that we're all going to starve to death. Is that what you want? Everyone to starve to death? Right? It's like, well, it's like, no, but the reason that agriculture was so labor dependent and labor intensive was because there were slaves. Once you get rid of the slaves, sorry, that sounds really bad. Once you free the slaves, that's probably better. Once you get rid of slavery and free the slaves, don't jump them into a giant Fargo style wood chipper. But once you free the slaves, the whole configuration changes, and agriculture doesn't look, and agriculture doesn't look like anything it looked like before. So the reality is that once you get rid of coercion for roads, then you're going to end up with a very, very different situation. Once people have to start paying for roads, I mean, there's a couple of things we know for sure. First of all, they'll start paying for high demand use. In other words, you'll pay more for rush hour than you would for non-rush hour. And that will occur until there's no such thing as rush hour. I mean, so wouldn't that be great?
That, folks, you already pay for every road. Don't think that the roads are free, because the roads aren't free. They're paid for by your taxes and your children's children's potential taxation.
Yeah, I mean, the whole interstate highway system was put in place through debt, not through taxes. That's why the baby boomers ended up so rich. Richest generation in history, because they got all these great goods they didn't have to pay for, and they just shafted you and I with the bill. I put us in the same edge category, which is completely unfair. But anyway, let's pretend that I'm younger. So who knows what the road systems are going to look like? I guarantee you that once people have to start paying for distance and for congestion, then people have staggered working times. Wouldn't that be great? Because, I mean, environmentalists should be entirely in favor of privatizing roads, because once you pay directly for the distance, and for the speed, right, for the congestion, people will start staggering. People will also want to work from home more, and the technology will develop for that. Local farmers will have a greater advantage in providing local services, which will cut down the amount of transportation, fuel, and exhaust, and all that kind of crap. I mean, that's just you could theorize forever. There will be amazing work done on teleportation. I mean, it sounds ridiculous, but so do giant dinosaur juice sucking combine harvesters that, you know, can do a field in 3 minutes. So we don't know.
But do you think that the time is right in terms of our technologically advanced society, in terms of, you know, our way of, like you said, the GPSs and the coin, you know, Bitcoin and these sort of things to make the transition to a stateless society a lot easier than it would have in the past?
Well, yeah, I think most fundamentally it's the reputation system that is available to people. So in other words, people say, well, what if I don't want to pay for some sort of geographical defense? I've got the free rider problem. Well, first of all, anyone who's worried about the free rider problem should never want the government. I mean, it's the problem of the commons, right? The free rider is, if everyone on my street pays for the army, and I don't pay for the army, I get all the benefits of geographical protection, but I don't have to pay for them. And so the idea is then that people would just stop paying. And then nobody will pay for it and there'll be no army. And this is, it's nonsense. I mean, first of all, what would happen, I would imagine, is if there's a social good called the army, which I imagine there would be, I mean, eventually they'll go away. I mean, but, you know, the same way that slave catchers went away with the end of slavery, with the end of state, of the state, you will have no more war. I mean, you need the state to have a war. No, let's finish the defense one for a second, the free rider. So let's say everybody wants the army and everybody views people who don't pay for the army as being jerks. Well, all that happens is, to me, all that happens is if you pay for the army, then your name gets published somewhere on the web, and it can be pinged like that. And so if you want to go for a job, maybe the first check they do is see, did you pay for the army? And if you didn't pay for the army, maybe that's kind of like a negative for you. Or, you know, maybe some cab drivers won't pick up people who don't pay for the army. You know, they just swipe your card. Oh, I'm sorry, you don't pay for the army. Get out of my cab. You're a freeloader. Whatever, right? I mean, social disapproval is an incredibly powerful technique. Studies have shown that social disapproval and ostracism produces the same effects on the brain as physical injury. So it's a painful thing. I mean, why do you tip in a restaurant even if you're never, ever going back to that town? Because that's just what you do. And so the way that people will pay for things that are collective is first and foremost through just it being known that they don't. And there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, you can publish everyone who pays for a service and then everyone who doesn't is automatically excluded. Maybe you get a special license plate if you pay. And maybe you get discounts on other things if you pay, because that's just generally a positive thing. So there's lots of ways to get people to pay for things without sticking guns to their faces. I mean, that's just inefficient and it's brutal.
And for instance, I think things like the insurance system. So if you have, if everyone else pays for firefighters on your street and you don't, but then they have built up a system saying, well, we don't want fires right next door, so we're going to pay for you to get your fire out even though you're not paying. But insurance premiums could be higher if you don't.
They would be, yeah. Yeah, I mean, if you pay more for health insurance if you smoke. And if you don't have fire insurance, then... Or if you don't pay for the firefighters, then your insurance for fire is going to be crazy. It's going to be way more than paying for the fire. And everyone on your street will know that you're the jerk who's not paying. Now, if you have some big moral objection to paying for these things, then you can grit your teeth and endure that social criticism and ostracism. But the reality is that there's lots and lots of ways to get things done in society through the sharing of information, through positive incentives like reduced rates. Why should you be a good parent? Because good parents who don't raise their children by screaming and smacking them, their children are much easier to educate because they're much lower, they're much less trouble for teachers than kids who have got, oppositional defiant disorder or whatever and need to be wrangled pretty heavily. And so if you're a good parent, then your cost of educating your child is going to be that much less. And so you want that less, so you'll look into becoming a better parent, so you'll pay less for whatever. And you'll also pay less for insurance for your children setting fire to things or strangling someone's cat or whatever. So there's lots of ways to put positive incentives in place for society without just having, crazy cats in blue running around throwing their bullets at people. I mean, that's just not an intelligent, civilized way to get things done in society.
So, Steph, do you think that functions of the state will take a lot of things like the fire department, things like this, will be taken over by insurance-style companies?
Well, I think so. I mean, the whole idea behind the state originally, if you can even call it an idea, was for catastrophes. I mean, the state has become this...
Might just leave it there until after the ad break. You're listening to Truth News Radio Australia. We try to give you the news from an Australian perspective down here to broaden the horizons a little bit, although we're all very much on the same page with a lot of issues, I think. But we're listening right now to Stefan Molyneux, an interview I did over Skype the other night. He's an anarchist philosopher, a market anarchist, so not of the traditional communist sense, more of a capitalist sense. Anyway, we'll be back after the break.
Would you like to make more definite progress in your walk with God? Bibles for America is offering a free study Bible and a set of free Christian books that can really help. The New Testament Recovery Version is one of the most comprehensive study Bibles available today. It's an accurate translation, and it contains thousands of footnotes that will help you to know God and to know the meaning of life. The free books are a three-volume set called Basic Elements of the Christian Life. Chapter by chapter, Basic Elements of the Christian Life clearly presents God's plan of salvation, growing in Christ, and how to build up the church. To order your free New Testament Recovery Version and Basic Elements of the Christian Life, call Bibles for America toll-free at 888-551-0102. That's 888-551-0102. Or visit us online at bfa.org.
The Stasi, East German secret police, used to capture prisoners' scent on pieces of felt stored in glass jars so dogs could hunt them down later. Unfortunately, some things never change. I'm Dr. Catherine Albrecht, and I'll be back with more.
Privacy is under attack. When you give up data about yourself, you'll never get it back again. And once your privacy is gone, you'll find your freedoms will start to vanish too. So protect your rights, say no to surveillance, and keep your information to yourself. Privacy, it's worth hanging on to. This public service announcement is brought to you by StartPage.com, the private search engine alternative to Google, Yahoo, and Bing. Start over with StartPage.
In Germany, 68-year-old leftist Fritz S. thought he'd seen it all, till officials knocked on his door in 2007 demanding something new, his smell. They thought the aging revolutionary might disrupt the G8 summit, so they made him hold little metal tubes in his hands for several minutes to collect his scent, just in case. Around that same time, the U.S. government sought research proposals for a similar system to collect human scent for tracking purposes. Those creepy interrogation jars I mentioned can be seen at the Stasi Museum in Berlin, along with other devices of surveillance and state control. Look closely. You may see our future. I'm Dr. Catherine Albrecht. More news and information at CatherineAlbrecht.com. Put down that coffee. There's a chance you may be drinking it out of a carcinogenic cup. I'm Dr. Catherine Albrecht, and I'll be back in just a moment with frightening new information about styrofoam.
Privacy is under attack. When you give up data about yourself, you'll never get it back again. And once your privacy is gone, you'll find your freedoms will start to vanish too. So protect your rights, say no to surveillance, and keep your information to yourself. Privacy, it's worth hanging on to. This public service announcement is brought to you by StartPage.com, the private search engine alternative to Google, Yahoo, and Bing. Start over with StartPage.
It's used for everything from packing peanuts to coffee cups, but now the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services says styrene, a component of styrofoam, may cause cancer. The government based its warning on studies that linked the chemical with lymphatic cancer and genetic damage. Styrene is used to make plastic products like pipes, carpet backing, insulation, and, of course, styrofoam cups. Chronic exposure leads to memory loss, headaches, vertigo, and tiredness. So don't let your kids drink out of styrofoam cups, which are oh so tempting to bite down on and chew or pick into little pieces. And be sure to drink your own coffee out of a ceramic mug. I'm Dr. Catherine Albrecht. More news and information at CatherineAlbrecht.com.
You're listening to the Logos Radio Network at logosradionetwork.com.
Sick of the lies, deception, spin, and half-truths? Well, so are we. You're listening to Truth News Radio Australia. Tune in every week at truthnews.com.au. Or subscribe to the podcast with iTunes or your favorite podcatcher.
You're listening to Truth News Radio Australia. I'm Josh Jackson, and I'm coming to you live from Down Under. And we're just broadcasting an interview I did with Stefan Molyneux of Free Domain Radio, a philosopher in market anarchy, and how you know, we would work if we thought, hey, look, the government's just too out of control. Let's evolve out of that space let's just evaporate that and have voluntary, peaceful interactions with one another. And we do that with most of our lives. You know, when we go to the shop, we voluntarily hand over some money and they hand over some good, and there's always a win-win situation. But with the state, a lot of the time, most of the time, they use force to get what they want, and they just give you a service, whether you like it or not. But anyway, without much further ado, we'll continue with the interview. And again, I apologize for sometimes the sound quality is a bit off with this interview, but I think it's worth listening to anyway.
A thing for every day. Like, but it's not. It was never supposed to be that. The reason you had a government originally was in case someone comes and steals all your stuff, which is a pretty rare occurrence in society. Or the reason you would have, it's like health insurance. Originally, health insurance was, you don't get health insurance for going, like, because you need to go to get a checkup once. That's like getting car insurance for an oil change. I mean, you know it needs to happen, and it's a pretty predictable cost. The reason you got health insurance was for just some crazy stuff that you couldn't expect, like, oh man, I got multiple sclerosis. That sucks. Or I've got, you know, some sort of god-awful cancer that's really expensive to treat. Exactly. And so the state was originally a sort of catastrophic insurance. So the state, of course, originally fires and firefighting and roads and charity and all the things which we currently associate with the state took all of those over from private. So, I mean, the roads were all there and the railroads were all there before the government took them over. In fact, when the government took them over, they got really crappy, right? So if you're building a road and you're a private road manufacturer, you want as straight a line as possible. But when the government puts roads in, they have them go all over the place like some snake having an epileptic lower intestine mirroring attack, because you have to have it touch this town to get the votes from this town, and then it has to go down to this town to get the votes, and then it's got to go up to this sawmill to get the votes from these guys, and you end up with these just, you know, dumped spaghetti strands of nonsense, and they're just incredibly inefficient. So
we're getting the exact same thing right now with a thing called the NBN down here in Australia, which is the National Broadband Network. It's meant to be this fantastic new super high speed internet. I mean, we have already got pretty fast internet. I mean, it's ADSL2. It's pretty good. It's not, you know, South Korea.
Or it's like Japan, where basically the internet is telepathic. I mean, it's so fast.
Exactly. I mean, it's not that, but the NBN's amazing, right? But it's being developed by the government. It's a monopoly. It's totally over budget, and everything's going bad with it. Meanwhile, all the private wireless networks are getting faster and faster, and by the time the whole thing's rolled out, it's going to be but it reminds me of that road analogy.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the government is there's no negative incentive when people can't go somewhere else. People are going to get them. They've got money at the point of a gun. So, of course, I mean, it's not like everyone in the government is bad. I certainly want to say that, but the fundamental incentives are completely the wrong way. And you know, it's funny because this is, I've written a book. It's free. It's on my website at freedomainradio.com/free, but it's called Everyday Anarchy, where I point out that we desperately love anarchy in our lives. I mean, the government doesn't tell you what profession you have to pursue. The government doesn't tell you what university to go to. The government doesn't tell you who to date. The government doesn't tell you who to get married or whether to have children. So we are desperately keen on anarchism, voluntarism, and if the government tried to come in and take away those things and say, I'm now going to pass a law and tell you who you have to marry and how many children you have to have, we would be like, oh my God, this is dictatorship. This is terrible. So we have a very positive relationship with statelessness, with voluntarism in just about every aspect of our lives. But then we pass through this weird barrier where up becomes down and black becomes white and gravity is reversed, and suddenly all the moral rules reverse themselves. And what I'm saying is anarchy works in our personal lives. Anarchy, and we desperately love it. We treasure it. We need it. It is the definition of freedom. And why not extend it to everything else and see? Just see where it bumps up against something which it can't handle. I don't think there'll be anything it can't handle. But let's just, we're not saying to some people, come to some unknown state you've never been to. We're saying, you know that thing you love in your personal life, in your dating life, in your professional life, in your friendships, that thing that you love and treasure so much, let's just push it out a little bit. Let's see if it can handle a little bit more. That's all. It's not an unknown state. Everybody lives in a state of statelessness, so to speak. It's just in this weird abstract social organization that we're happy to let the guns come out.
The main issue that I can't get past is things like child protection and mm-hmm. animal rights in a stateless society, because I feel that is a really hard one, because children, I can't think of anything worse than when the state comes and knocks on your door and takes someone's kid. But in some cases, you think, God, thank God that poor child.
You're right. They need to be where they need to not be wherever they are, right? If they're some terrible household. Those are great questions. Yeah. Yeah. Look, I mean, those are fantastic questions, and I think that really, I think they're the most important questions. So, you know, first of all, just to touch on animal rights, I mean, I'm a vegetarian, my wife's a vegetarian, we're very keen on this stuff. The first thing that needs to happen is we've got to stop subsidizing meat. I mean, the price of meat is way subsidized, and that has a huge impact on the dietary habits of the nation. You know, it takes, 7 pounds of grain to produce 1 pound of meat. Well, why the hell isn't meat 7 times more expensive than grain? Because it's subsidized. And so we've got to stop subsidizing the farmers who are producing this stuff. It's brutal. It's horrible. It's bad for the environment. It's bad for people's health. I mean, new studies have come out every day that the red meat is like basically a toxin. And so, yeah, we have to get the government out of the food production industry. I mean, you know, in Europe, they have these lakes of butter and mountains of meat because they just produce stuff and throw it out. I mean, or they dump this stuff on the third world, destroying the livelihood of local farmers and producing an entirely aid-dependent society, which is just brutal. So getting the government out of the food production business, I think, is absolutely essential. I mean,
if one country stopped doing that, then another country would have the subsidies and all the meat would be imported.
Yeah, but you have to do the right thing no matter what, right? I mean, it's like if we have a cure for AIDS and Japan has a cure for cancer and Japan won't sell us their cure for cancer, I still want to sell them the cure for AIDS. I mean, yeah, if they want to be idiots, let them be idiots. That doesn't mean,
Sorry, go ahead. And funnily enough, the same thing is in the airline industry. We have private organizations like Qantas competing with state-owned airlines that can easily drop their prices as low as anything. It does work.
Yeah. So, and animal rights is a complex topic. But I certainly think that the very first thing we need to do is get the government out of agriculture. Let the true cost of meat be reflected in the price of meat, and I think it will become such a rare delicacy that it will, I think, pretty much fade from a good chunk of the sort of human table food landscape. But the second thing is, of course, if you want animals to be treated well, I mean, this is very well known in psychological circles that cruelty to animals is results from cruelty to children. Right? If you're really cruel to children, they'll do what George Bush did when he was a kid, which is to stuff firecrackers into frogs and blow them up, because he was a little sociopath even back then, right? And so if we treat children well, then they will grow up with far greater compassion for animals. I mean, I know this. I mean, you know, I've never yelled at my daughter. I've never called her a name. I've certainly never spanked or hit her or threatened her or threatened to abandon her or I'm leaving, come if you want or anything. And she's incredibly gentle to animals. She's held snakes. She's ridden horses. She's, you know, there are cats in the neighborhood. She loves to pet and she's incredibly gentle with them. So to be kind to animals, first thing we need to be is kind to children. So get the government out of agriculture, be kind to children. That's the best hope that animals have for a decent life in our society. As far as the protection of children goes, certainly they're not being protected now. I mean, I think that's very clear. We have a system in most of the West, and I'm pretty sure it's the same in Australia, which is, you know, we've got this welfare state. And the welfare state, as Charles Murray has pointed out in his pretty seminal book from a couple of decades ago called Losing Ground, where you can have children out of wedlock and you can raise them. And the state has taken the place of the father. And although the state can't emotionally or from a parental standpoint, it's taken the sort of resource allocation, right? It gives resources to the single moms and so on. And you have this just unbelievably wretched situation where it's a majority in some sections in the U.S. and significant percentages, a third, a half, two-thirds, depending on the community, of children are growing up without a father. And that is incredibly bad for children. And so, you know, we need to have a situation where we don't subsidize teen pregnancy. We don't subsidize single parenthood. I mean, if you want to be a single parent, so I don't think it's a great idea, but, you know, at least pay for it yourself. Because in the past, it used to happen that if you got pregnant out of wedlock, the man had to marry you, which made the man very careful about protection, or you gave the child up for adoption, which is, you know, makes some other couple happy and is very much better for the children. It's much better for the child to grow up in a two-parent adopted household than it is in a single-parent biological household. And so that's how it used to work. So, you know, we've created the situation where children are just being born into these terrible households. You know, we've got the drug war, which creates ghettos and creates this gangbanger culture, which is really, really bad. We have educational systems that are unbelievably wretched. I mean, all throughout the West, educational standards are just terrible. In Canada, I mean, 50% of kids don't even graduate from high school. In the U.S., the percentages are even worse. We have the drugging of children for non-existent, non-real, imaginary illnesses like ADHD and, which are... there's no scan for them. There's no medical criteria. It's just like, oh, he seems fidgety. Here, let's bomb his brain with psychoactive drugs. I mean, it's just wretched and abominable. So children are being served incredibly badly under our existing society. And of course, they get to go to war if they have been raised really badly and have bad decision-making skills. So we don't want to compare the future to some imagined, you know, how can we get as good a protection from anarchism as we do from statism for kids? They're just being incredibly badly treated. And let's not even talk about the national debt, for God's sakes. I mean, they're born into hundreds of thousands of dollars of unfunded liabilities because the pattern of society when coercion is at its center is to sacrifice the interests of children in order to pretend to keep peace among adults, rather than confront public sector unions, rather than confront entitled old people, rather than confront pensions and unfunded liabilities. We basically just shaft the children and hand them the bill because they don't vote and they're not even here yet, some of them. So the way that we deal with children in society right now is incredibly brutal. It's probably among the worst it's ever been in the last 100 or 200 years. So in a free society, well, first of all, 50% less taxation means at least one parent can stay home. Because right now, in order to have any kind of decent lifestyle, two parents have to go to work. And now I think that one parent should stay home. I'm the stay-at-home parent here. One parent should stay home even if it means sacrificing lifestyle. I mean, kids want not a second car, but a parent home. So, yeah, so you got a parent home, that's you're automatically way better off. You have...
We're just going to pause it there for a break, and you're listening to Truth News Radio Australia, and we'll be back after the break.
Capital Coin and Bullion is a family-owned business built on the promise to bring you affordable pricing on all coin and bullion products. In addition to coins and bullion, we now offer storable freeze-dried foods produced by Augustin Farms, ammunition at 10% above wholesale prices, Berkey water products, gift certificates, and our silver pool, a new way to guarantee silver by prepaying at a locked price. We can even help you set up a metals IRA account. Call us at 512-646-6440 for more details. As always, we buy, sell, and trade precious metals, give appraisals, and cater to those with all sizes of coin collections. We're located at 7304 Burnett Road, Suite A, about a half a mile north of Koenig, next to the Ikebon Sushi and Genie Car Wash. We're open Monday through Friday, 10 to 6, Saturdays, 10 to 2. Visit us at capitalcoinandbullion.com or call 512-646-6440 and say you heard about us on Rule of Law Radio or Texas Liberty Radio.
What's been the problem with phone companies? High prices and contracts that lock you in for 2 years minimum. Not FreedomTelephones.com. Freedom Telephones are designed around the concept and reality of patriotism, loyalty, and privacy. With FreedomTelephones.com, there are no contracts, no credit checks, and no Social Security numbers required. That's why our name is FreedomTelephones.com. Finally, residential, mobile, and business telephones and plans that are private and never lock you into a long-term
contract. Want a low price? Residential and business plans start at only $14.99, and mobile plans start at just $39.99. Plus, every month you pay your bill, FreedomTelephones.com contributes to your favorite programs. Don't wait. Support the cause and get the highest quality and the lowest prices by calling 1-800-600-5553. That's 800-600-5553. FreedomTelephones.com. Portable. Private. Perfect.
Listening to Truth News Radio Australia. I'm coming from Adelaide, South Australia, right down the bottom of the end of the world down here. And right now we're having an interesting thought exercise with Stefan Molyneux of freedomainradio.com, discussing how society will work without a government whatsoever. And a lot of us in the freedom movement are what is called a minarchist, people that believe we need a little bit of government, but it needs to be reined in, so a constitutional small government. But some people take it all the way and just go, hey, you know what? If you've got a cancer, you don't just try to minimize it. You just get rid of it and see how it works. See how society can take up the slack using markets and normal systems that we do in every other parts of our lives. So we'll continue with the interview. Again, I know I've been saying this often, but for our new listeners, the show is the interview I did is pre-recorded. There's a little bit of dodgy quality in the sound, and sometimes my voice cuts out. But it's such an interesting little show, we'll have to listen to it anyhow. Okay, here we'll continue with Stefan Molyneux.
Subsidies for irresponsible parenting, which means you'll just get a reduction in irresponsible. I mean, you can see this. The welfare state goes in, single parenthood just goes through the roof. Of course. I mean, because, you know, so you know the opposite will happen. And once the state starts funding single parenthood, it will go down. And that's going to be for the betterment of kids. We don't have a child-centered educational system. I mean, were you ever asked how you wanted to be educated when you were a child?
No.
I mean, isn't that crazy? I mean, my local pizza joint has a feedback form. I mean, they include it with every pizza they deliver. I mean, my local pizza joint cares to death whether I like their damn pizza. And how important is that relative to 15,000 hours of, quote, education for children? To never ask children how they want to be educated is a fundamental insult to their self-ownership. And so in a free society, I mean, who knows what education will look like? There are unschoolers, people who just say, well, kids will figure out what they want when they want, and I'll just facilitate that. There's other kinds of Sudbury school, Lancashire schools, other different kinds of schools where, yeah, they really are, because we have to rediscover our respect for children. I mean, they've just become these pawns in state coercion, and they've become assets for people to fight over their future productivity and future taxation. They've become a kind of resource to be mined by corrupt adults. It's just unbelievable what we're doing with kids. So we need better education.
Yes.
No, go ahead.
So in a total non-statist paradigm, if there was a house that was, the father was drinking a lot because he's lost his job and can't afford insurance and all the rest, and takes it out on his children constantly, what sort of mechanisms could be used? And I know that you don't have all the answers, because otherwise you'd be advocating dictatorship. But what sort of philosophical answers could you have to these problems? Not comparing to the state that we all know it's a horrible situation right now.
Sure. Well, you would have to look at philosophy is about prevention. It's like nutrition. Somebody's having a heart attack, you don't call a nutritionist. Because the nutritionists will just say, well, 20 years ago, he should have eaten less red meat. Whatever, right? I mean, you call it a medic, right? So philosophy is really about prevention. not about cure. So the way that I would look at that is to say, how did it end up? How did it end up in that situation? And the purpose of a free society is that it's much more economically valuable to prevent these situations from occurring than to try and deal with them after the fact. So there'll be massive amounts of resources placed into prevention rather than cure. So let's say that this guy is an alcoholic, and let's say that he gets married and he wants to have kids. And so he's going to have to be part of a social network to have kids. He's going to have doctors. He's going to have educators and babysitters. And he's going to have to be part of a social network. When you raise kids, you really have to be part of a community. And so let's say he wants to have kids. Well, the first thing he's going to have to do is he's going to have to figure out, at some point he's going to have to figure out, well, look, my kids could go out and they could key someone's car. They could set fire to something. They could go beat up another kid. Remember, I was a kid, I threw a rock in the air and it landed on the hood of somebody's expensive car, putting a nice dent in. So my kids might do things that damage other people's property. So I need insurance for that. I do, right? So the first thing he'll do is go to the insurance company and say, I want to buy insurance for, quote, badly behaving kids. And they'll say, great, okay, if you take our parenting classes and you allow us to chat with your kids every year for an hour or two, then it costs you $50 a year. And if you don't take our parenting classes or you don't take any approved parenting classes and you never let us talk to your children, oh, and by the way, we can see from your alcohol consumption, if you sign this release form for us to look it up, that you drink a lot, it's going to cost you about $12,000 a year to insure your children. So he's going to go, okay, so how much do these parenting classes cost? It's like, oh, no, they're free, because it's just going to be that much though. Free parenting classes and $50 a year to insure your kids, or no parenting classes, no visits, and $12,000 a year to protect your kids. Oh, and by the way, if you're a drinker and you don't parent your kids well, you then go to the school and you say to the school, okay, I want to put my kids in school. Why? Because I'm bombed half the day. I can't take care of them and put them in school. And the school says, ah, okay, have you taken these parenting classes? Do you have the waiver from the insurance company that you're a good parent? And he says, no, burp, I smell like whiskey even, you know, in this morning meeting. And they're going to say, okay, well, so we're probably going to need a one-to-one ratio of teachers to your kids, because they're just going to be like savages, and it's going to be Lord of the Flies in here. And so if you get this parenting waiver, then it's going to be about $3,000 a year for us to educate your children. But if you don't, it's going to be about $45,000 a year to educate your children. However, if you take these remedial parenting classes now, then we can drop it from $45,000 down to about $8,000. And then after a couple of years, it'll go back down to three. And by the way, the parenting classes are free. Now, that's how it would work, because unruly children, badly parented children, are very expensive to society. Child abuse is estimated to cost, just in the U.S. alone, $120, $130 billion a year. That's just in direct costs. The indirect costs must be enormously higher. And so who pays for this? Not the parents, but the general taxpayer. And the parents should pay for it in the same way that if my dog, you know, bites somebody else, they have to pay for their health, their medical care. And so I don't know how this will work, but these are the ways that I think it would work, that if you choose not to do that which is scientifically known to produce well-behaved children, i.e. no spanking, no aggression, no reason with them and so on, and be home for the first couple of years at least, then you have to pay the cost for that. Right now, you can just dump them in school and society pays the cost. And if they go to prison, society pays the cost. You should pay the cost if you parent your kids badly. And you should also get the benefits of parenting them well. Those kinds of financial incentives are the only way that I know how to prevent in a sustainable, positive way. Does that mean no one will fall through the cracks? Well, yeah, there will be some people. They live in the hills of Montana or out back in the, you know, in the Queens, out back in the outback somewhere. But I mean, that would happen now anyway. Someone goes live in the woods that, you know, you can't help in a state of society anyway. But the vast majority of people would be much better off as children under this kind of system.
Now, you've been so gracious with your time, Steph, and I've only got a couple more questions if you can.
Sure.
Well,
it's what? 2:30 in the morning for you now. I mean, once you face plant on your keyboard, I'll assume that the interview is over. Until then, you know, I have no shortage of syllables.
This conversation's far too interesting to face plant the keyboard just yet.
Just yet. Okay, but keep it interesting, Baldy. Right. Okay.
So I love that idea. Now, what a lot of people say to me is, I don't want to be tracked and traced. That's just Big Brother. I don't want to have a thing in my car tracking every bit of my movement so they can charge me, and the insurance company knowing every habit that I do so that I can raise my children, and all this sort of thing. And, I, you know, I tend to not, because the other night I went to a pub and they, it was at night time and it was a bit of a club pub sort of thing, and they took, you know, they searched you, they made you empty your pockets, all very nicely. They didn't threaten me or anything. They said, look, if you want to come in, do this. And they also took my driver's license and they put it under a little camera. It got my friend very concerned that they were doing, what are they doing with this information, bloody Big Brother state and all this stuff. And I said, well, it's not actually, you know, we don't have to come here. If we find this overly too much, then I won't. But I sort of feel a bit safer because if there's someone some crazy guy in there with a bottle ready to go nuts and glass people over the head, then they probably won't because they know that they've got their license being scanned and they know the cops will know where to find them. But these are the sorts of queries that I get. How would you sort of quench the thirst for an answer being...
Just leave it there for a minute. And I just wanted to clarify that, I can't stand when the government tracks and traces me, but I feel that private organisations tend to have a little bit more need to satisfy me. But we'll be back after the break.
This is Building 7, a 47-story skyscraper that fell on the afternoon of September 11th.
The government says that fire brought it down. However, 1,500 architects and engineers concluded it was a controlled demolition.
Over 6,000 of my fellow service members have given their lives.
And thousands of my fellow first responders are dying.
I'm not a conspiracy theorist.
I'm a structural engineer.
I'm a New York City correction officer.
I'm an Air Force pilot.
I'm a father who lost his son.
We're Americans, and we deserve the truth.
Go to rememberbuilding7.org today.
HempUSA.org has moved and expanded its operations for faster worldwide shipping. Our product line has grown from 5 to nearly 100 items in less than 5 years. Our food is grown naturally, always chemical-free, not found in stores. Great for daily intake and perfect for your emergency storage shelter. Call 908-691-2608 or visit HempUSA.org and see what our powder, seeds, and oil can do for you.
More energy, stronger immune power, improved sense of well-being. How many supplements have you heard boast of these benefits? The team behind Centrition believes that supplements should over-deliver on their promises. And Centrition does just that. Centrition utilizes the ancient healing wisdom of Chinese medicine in conjunction with the science of modern nutrition. Adaptogenic herbs serve as the healing component, and organic hemp protein and greens and superfoods act as a balanced nutrient base. Plus, Centrition tastes great in just water. This powder supplement is everything you'd want in a product, and it's all natural. Visit Centrition.com to order yours or call 1-866-497-7436. After you use Centrition, you'll believe in supplements again.
You're listening to Truth News Radio Australia, going beyond the spin, deception and propaganda of mainstream news. Visit truthnews.com.au and subscribe now.
The man who stole the water will swim forevermore, but he'll never reach the land on that golden shore. That faint white light will haunt his heart till he's...
Welcome back to Truth News Radio Australia. You can visit us on truthnews.com.au. You're listening to an interview I did with Stefan Molyneux of Free Domain Radio about how society would function without a state whatsoever, more of a market anarchist where people would set up, private courts and private law, contracts, contract rating agencies and all sorts of things. His philosophies quite interesting, and there's plenty of people that
talk about this stuff in philosophy because, like I said in the radio, you know, he doesn't know all the answers, and he doesn't, because how can you know any of the answers? And this is why we don't think governments or dictatorships or would work, because no one knows all the answers, and markets tend to know a lot more. I mean, I know a lot more about my needs than any person in a government could know. And anyhow, we were just leaving up before the break about privacy and Big Brother, and I just wanted to clarify that, you know, you have a lot of private companies gaining access to your information, but you see, I tend to think that gathering of information is different than a state gathering information, because a state doesn't need to ask you or doesn't need to please you in what it does with that information. See, if a company was to, you know, need your information for some reason to function, if they started really using that information badly, let's take Google, for example. You know, Google knows a fantastic amount about everybody, you know, that uses it. And this is quite scary, and it should be. You should never just let anyone have all your info. You should always be wary, because your info is important. But at the same time, if Google was ever to do majorly bad things with that information, they would lose a huge amount of customers very quickly. So they are very careful of how they treat that information. And that's not a fail-safe for sure, but it's better than a state that just goes around wielding guns and police forces and all the rest, and can do anything with the information, because you really can't do anything about it. You know, if you don't like it, bad luck. You know, we're going to do whatever we want with the info. This is a distinction. It's very important that I tend to think, in a private sense, you have a lot more leverage with your information as a customer than you do with government. But anyway, we'll get back to the interview. Again, for the new listeners, the quality is not perfect, but it's an interesting conversation to have a listen to. Cheers.
Well, yeah. So first of all, I would recognize that look at the total quote surveillance that you would be under. So in a free society, of course, you don't need a work permit. You don't need state licenses to do things. You may have private licenses that would be, you know, if you want to be a plumber, some people would probably prefer that you had some sort of private accreditation, but you wouldn't be enforced. That wouldn't be enforced. You wouldn't have a passport. You wouldn't have, these radar cameras. You wouldn't have all of the stuff that currently tracks you. Like, so the government can have access to your online records and all that kind of stuff. So all of that will be gone, right? So let's not look at the new stuff. Let's look at the stuff also that will be gone, right? So if I replace a 10-pound weight with a 5-pound weight, it doesn't make much sense to say, this 5-pound weight is crazy. It's too heavy. It's like, you're still 5 pounds lighter than you were before. So that's a good thing. So that's the first thing I would say. The second thing I would say is, if you find it objectionable to share information with insurance companies, with road companies, and so on, then don't. You just have to pay the cost, right? So if I don't want to say to an insurance company if I smoke or not, they will just charge me as a smoker, right? So if I don't want to share information, then I don't have to, but I will simply have to pay for my privacy. Because without information, the risks that I pose cannot be assessed accurately. Does that make sense? So I don't have to tell my insurance company if I have smoke detectors or not, but they will then simply charge me as if I didn't. And so the reason you share information is for economic efficiency. And if you don't want to share your information, you just have to pay for the cost of your privacy. That's one answer I would give them. So yeah, don't participate, but then pay the cost. If you find it worthwhile to get a 50% reduction in your insurance by sharing some bits of information, then you can. If you don't want to, you don't have to, just pay for it. That's the first thing that I would do. But the second thing that I would say is, what an incredible entrepreneurial opportunity it would be for some entrepreneur, some skilled business person to come along and say, I can solve this problem for you. I'm going to create an intermediary party between you and the insurance company. So I will know your identity And I will share that information with the insurance company, but the insurance company will never know your direct identity. So it gets anonymized, it gets encrypted, it goes through some third-party firewall.
I see. So another company would say, hey, we have all this information, but we will only say to the insurance company, this guy's good for...
Yeah, we will certify, here's the rate you should give this guy, and we will certify that, and we will pay any difference if that turns out not to be the case. So the insurance company doesn't know there's some third party now. Okay, you say, well, I'm giving all my information to that third party, but that third party would have to have safeguards in place to make sure as much as possible that you could be anonymized, that you would not be tracked as much as possible. So if you got some GPS thing, maybe the GPS information goes with a number. And the insurance company doesn't know that that number represents you. But, I mean, somewhere there has to be a link. But you would put as many shields in as possible so that you would pay the bill, but your information would not be exposed to the insurance company. So, I mean, these are just possibilities, right? I mean, you get this stuff on the internet. You can buy these third-party tools where you go through their servers and they encrypt stuff and all that kind of stuff. So that would just be a market opportunity for people who didn't want to share their information. Some genius would find some way to solve that and would make a fortune doing so. So these are just, what are problems in a state society are simply an excuse for another law that creates more problems. But what are problems in a stateless society is an opportunity for an entrepreneur to solve them to the satisfaction of everyone. And that's just a very different paradigm for people to get used to.
Absolutely. Because in the state paradigm, they just deal with it. This is how it's done. This is how it's always been done. And, deal with it. This is how it works.
It's like in the state society, well, we've got state welfare, so now we have more single moms. So now we've got to have more police because there's more crime, and now the kids are less able to pay attention in school because they're growing up without dads. So now we need more laws to allow the drugging of children, and now we need to have metal detectors in the schools, and now we need to have cops in the schools. And now all that happens is you get more and more violence to solve the problems created by the earlier waves of violence. That's not the way it works in a free society. In a free society, Apple doesn't come and say, you didn't order an iPhone, I'm going to lock you in the back of the Apple van and drive you off to go and produce them in China. I mean, they just say, okay, well, we'll try and find some way to entice you in the next round to get you to buy one. I mean, it's a very fundamentally different paradigm. You can't compare the two. It's like saying, well, once we ban rape, how will human beings reproduce? Well, first of all, we ban rape because rape is wrong, right? This is the fundamental. And then people will date. That's how we'll reproduce. I don't know. We'll lie about our, the sports car being a bought and not a rental. I don't know. But I mean, they'll find some other way.
You might date someone that chops people's heads off.
And maybe you're into that. Maybe that's your thing, in which case we wish an insurance company had exposed you to less S&M pornography when you were a kid. I don't know, right? But there's ways to do it. That's all I'm saying.
I just want to reiterate, we're not saying that all people that grew up under single parents are bad. I mean, I grew up, my mum was a single parent, and,
mine too.
I'm, generally a pretty good guy. But
But you are an anarchist, though, so...
I am, so...
I don't know. No, and look, it's just statistically. Not everyone who smokes is going to die of lung cancer, but that's, but statistically it is many times worse for the outcome. There's no single bigger predictor of negative outcomes for children than being in a single-parent household, and it's not the fault of moms who have bad intent. It's just the reality of the way our upbringing and our brains work. So, no, absolutely not. I'm not saying that everyone, of course, not everyone who's a criminal was a single mom, but... it's about 70% of criminals came from single-parent households. It's very much higher.
Amazing. And my piece of resistance...
piece de resistance
of a question is, how do we evolve into this society? How do you actually... I mean, and I know you're a big fan of peaceful parenting, and I know that that's a big, big picture thing, but in terms of technicalities... of, for instance, roads that are all public spaces now, parks, do we just go out and put a flag in it and say, this is mine? I mean,
well, I know we would, the way that you would do it, and it would probably be a pretty corrupt thing because it would still be run by the remnants of the state, but you would sell it off. And the reason you would sell it off is whoever can generate the biggest bid for it is the person who can get the most economic value out of it. And that's the person who you want to own that resource. And so, you would sell this stuff off and you would use it to pay off whoever had legitimate claims against the productivity of the future generations through a national debt. I mean, it's the same thing. You have a yard sale when you've got too much debt, and there would be a yard sale called everything. the government would have, and it would. But I mean, it's a slow transition. I mean, it's a multi-generational process, just the same way that equality for women and equality for slaves was a multi-generational process. I think it'd be a little faster because we got the internet. It takes time, and it comes out of people making commitment to raise their children peacefully. That means we get far fewer criminals, far fewer people who want to go into government. Sorry, I repeat myself again. But you get far fewer social problems when children are raised well, much less drug addiction, much less promiscuity, much less smoking, much less poor healthcare outcomes, much less teen pregnancy, much less out-of-wedlock pregnancy. And so,
are you the plaintiff or defendant in a lawsuit? Win your case without an attorney with JurisDictionary, the affordable, easy-to-understand 4-CD course that will show you how in 24 hours, step by step. If you have a lawyer, know what your lawyer should be doing. If you don't have a lawyer, know what you should do for yourself. Thousands have won with our step-by-step course, and now you can too. JurisDictionary was created by a licensed attorney with 22 years of case-winning experience. Even if you're not in a lawsuit, you can learn what everyone should understand about the principles and practices that control our American courts. You'll receive our audio classroom, video seminar, tutorials, forms for civil cases, pro se tactics, and much more. Please visit ruleoflawradio.com and click on the banner or call toll-free 866-LAW-EASY.
Hey, did you hear? Ron Paul's announced he's running for president in 2012.
Who's Ron Paul?
Really? Okay, put down the cell phone for 1 minute. Your friends really don't care about your Twitter updates on what you had for breakfast.
Oh, but I love to make those little smiley faces with punctuation marks.
Of course you do. Now listen closely. You need to go down to Brave New Books and learn as much as you can about Ron Paul and his message before it's too late. They have all of his books and many of the books he talks about. They also have t-shirts, bumper stickers, and yard signs so that you can show your support for him during the campaign.
Brave New Books? Do they have Harry Potter and Twilight?
No, but they do carry a large selection of survival and preparedness books to protect your family in time of emergency.
That sounds like that show on the Discovery Channel.
Yeah, there's even a wilderness survival expert that teaches classes called Earth Skills School that you can sign up for on the website bravenewbookstore.com. What are you doing?
I'm tweeting all my friends that they should go to bravenewbookstore.com or down to the bookstore in person. Where's that located?
1904 Guadalupe Street.
There, it's sent. I even made a smiley face.
Great.
Welcome back to Truth News Radio Australia. You've been listening to an interview I did with Stefan Molyneux. We're going to have to cut it slightly short. There was only a couple of minutes left anyhow, because we have a wonderful guest on the air, Emily Cheshire. She is a health coach. She's an amazing author, and her website is thebeautyplan.com. Emily, are you there?
I am. Hi, Josh.
Welcome on board. So, I wanted to have a chat to you because you're the health guru down here, and I wanted to have a chat to you about inflammation. Because I just see so many people that got a psoriasis or some sort of problems, and it generally always comes down to inflammation. And I think, what are you eating? And their diet's always ridiculous, you know, so much refined sugars and all the rest of it. Mm-hmm. And I just wanted to ask you what is inflammation?
Sure. Well, look, yeah, inflammation is really prolific. And as you said, I mean, it's really rare to sort of come across somebody that isn't suffering from some sort of a inflammatory response. And basically what inflammation is, it's our body's natural sort of protective response to bacteria and viruses. So it's a good thing, and we really need it. If we didn't have it, we wouldn't be here. So we do rely on the inflammatory response. It's basically our white blood cells are the cells of the immune system. So if you're going to the doctor, if you've ever been to the doctor and had a blood test and they come back to you with the results and say, oh, look, your white blood cell count is pretty high, and you sort of freak out thinking, oh, no, what does that mean? They'll generally have a feel around of your glands and say, oh, okay, look, it seems like you've got a bit of a bacterial infection. So that's your body just doing its thing, what it needs to do. That's your natural immune response. But where it can go wrong is when our body's out of balance because we're smoking or we're taking in foods that are sort of creating an imbalance in our system. That's where our immune system and the inflammatory response goes a little bit haywire, and that's where you can sort of encounter things like psoriasis, eczema, arthritis, and accelerated aging as well. You'll sort of start to notice more lines on your face and you'll be feeling a bit more tired. You just won't be feeling at your optimum.
Right. And so what are the kinds of foods that cause inflammation or drinks? I know smoking and
alcohol. Smoking is a massive one, absolutely. Smoking and alcohol, absolutely, they're your number one. But lack of exercise, that can be quite inflammatory to your system. Stress is a big one that we don't really sort of think of. Stress really has a really profound effect on the system and quite an inflammatory effect. Also, not being grounded. Now, grounding, I know we don't have a lot of time to talk, and I'll come on another stage and have a longer chat about grounding because it's amazing. It's one of the most potent anti-inflammatories known to man, and hardly any of us are even aware of this, and it's absolutely free. All you need to do is take your shoes off and go and stand on the earth. So,
go
ahead. Sorry.
So, is that in a sense the same as grounding the plug in a kettle or a computer is grounded? Are you saying that there's electrons that we need to release, or how does that work?
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly it. And I mean, the human body, like all the animals on the planet, we've all been designed to sort of work with the conductivity and the electrical ways of the earth, of the planet, and that's certainly, I mean, we weren't born with, you know, rubber soles, and just over the last, say, you know, 50 to 100 years, we've sort of started introducing a layer that disconnects us from the earth and the earth's conductivity. And then at the same, and that's by wearing our rubber-soled shoes. And at the same time, we've introduced other things into our life, you know, gadgets and computers and phones and so on. So the importance of getting grounded is that when we're barefoot, we're basically just releasing the build-up electrons, and that's, it's just an extraordinarily potent anti-inflammatory.
Wow.
So if you can, even if you can, you know, have 5 minutes out on the earth with your bare feet on the ground, that's great. That you get, when there's been scientific studies where they sort of have been looking at the blood cells and the reaction, and it is more potent if you can spend over 3 hours with your bare feet on the ground, then that's absolutely brilliant. But I mean, you're still going to see a fantastic response, even if, say, you're working in the city and you don't really have a park that you can go out and stand in. I mean, if you can just, there's always a little bit of a nature strip somewhere. If you can even just go out on your lunch break and take your shoes off, or just put your hand down on the earth, even for a couple of minutes, I mean, that will still be really, really brilliant for you.
Yeah, and I know so many people are time poor. I've heard about grounding sheets. What are they?
Yeah, that's such a good point. I'm really glad you brought that up because actually I was talking to somebody the other day and they said, oh, look, I just hate the idea of having my feet on the earth. It freaks me out. I don't want to get worms. And I mean, some people do have a bit of an aversion to, you know, having their bare skin on the earth. I mean, I love it. I can't get enough of it. But, you know, if it does sort of irk you in that way, there are grounding sheets and grounding mats that you can purchase. Just type it into Google, type grounding mat in, and there'll be a number of sources where you can go and purchase them.
So you can sit there on your computer with a mat that's, I guess, plugged into the ground of your wall socket?
Exactly.
Okay.
Yep, that's exactly it. So it's fantastic if you're working in an office where you're just on your computer all day, because you can sort of start to feel that horrible sort of negative effect. You sort of feel like you've got ants in your pants, where you just sort of feel like you need to get out into the fresh air and out and get your feet in the earth. But you'll probably notice if you can, if you're working in an office and you get the grounding pad and just sort of pop your bare feet on there as you work, you'll probably notice that you're feeling a lot more relaxed than usual, and a lot of your tension will sort of naturally ease away. So yeah, that's a great way of doing it. Or you can have a grounding sheet which has just a slight sort of metal thread running through.
It's like a matrix of silver, isn't it?
It
silver
is.
Thread.
Yeah, I know that you've got one yourself, Josh.
I pretend to, as the interviewer, you know, get the information out. But I love my grounding sheet. I think it's just it's one of these special things. And big silver's being antibacterial as well, so you're, it lies on where your feet are, and it's wonderful. But if people don't want to spend any money, you know, the beach is a fantastic grounder, right?
Oh, absolutely. One of the best things that you can do if you're near the ocean, just go for a swim or just loll about in the water, float on your back, because, I mean, then you're just being enveloped by a grounding system. That's if you want a really super-duper powerful anti-inflammatory, that's it right there.
Now, you did a whole video of things to do at the beach, which I saw, which was fantastic, and I urge people to go and have a look at that on YouTube. What would they type in?
You can just type in my name, Emily Cheshire, that's C-H-E-S-H-E-R, or just type in the beauty plan and it should pop up. But, yeah, that's good, and that's just including, yeah, going for a walk along the beach with your bare feet or going for a swim as an anti-inflammatory. But, I mean, another thing that's really powerful besides grounding is obviously diet.
Oh, for inflammation?
Yeah, for reducing inflammation. So if you can sort of get rid of the junk foods, your refined sugars, and increase your raw foods. And the best way of doing that that's really quick and easy, because you might not sort of want to be sitting there eating, you know, five salads a day, is when you wake up, just make yourself a freshly squeezed juice. And if you can throw in a few of your really super-duper anti-inflammatory foods, and I'll give you a little list of them now if you want to grab a pen and jot them down out there. Turmeric is absolutely fantastic. Now, I mean, you can spend a lot of money and go to your health food store and get turmeric or ginger capsules, and they'll cost you a lot. But, I mean, there's such a beautiful flavour, and it's a lot more cost-effective if you just go and buy the actual root of the turmeric and the root of the ginger from your local grocer or farmer's market, preferably organic. And then just every time you have a juice, just chop off like a good inch and pop that through. And that's a fantastic anti-inflammatory and really, really good immune booster just absolutely fantastic for your health. Pineapple is another one that's a great anti-inflammatory because it's so high in your enzymes. So if you can have a juice where you're putting in lots of greens, say put a whole head of cost lettuce or kale, put some celery in, that's another great anti-inflammatory, your turmeric and your ginger, and then just pop in anything else that you like the flavour of. So it might be some apple or some carrots or some beetroot. And there you've got a fantastic way to start the day.
And how long does it take to start showing your inflammation going down if you're doing all these things, eating a bit better, cutting out the inflammatory foods and grounding and all these things?
Yeah, well, if your diet was pretty bad in the first place, you'd probably start feeling a little bit worse, having a little bit of a detox effect in the first week, but that's fine. That's just your body releasing a few of the toxins that have been built up.
Cravings, right? I mean, you get all these cravings and mood swings because you're not getting your sugar and all this stuff too.
Absolutely. Well, they're addictive, aren't they? So you'll sort of you'll be having your you'll be sort of feeling really craving for your sweets, and especially if you've been smoking, you're cutting down your cigarettes. Actually, if you are wanting to have an anti-inflammatory diet and you are a smoker, I'd actually suggest that you start working on your diet first for a good couple of weeks, and then move into reducing your smoking, because when you stop your smoking, that's when you're going to really have a double dose of craving your sweets and your junk food. So yeah, just don't go too gung-ho into it. Just write down a bit of a plan and start with your freshly squeezed juices. That's a brilliant way of starting off. And but to answer your question, I'd say after a good 2 months, that's when you'll be absolutely reaping the full rewards. And that's when you'll start noticing if you do have psoriasis or eczema or arthritis, you'll start to notice that you'll be getting a lot more relief.
So, Emily, sadly, we've only got a minute left in this segment at the show, but I'm definitely going to have you back on because there's some amazing information. And where would people get in contact with you if they're interested in natural health and beauty stuff?
Yeah, sure. They can just find me at thebeautyplan.com. If they want to ask any questions for me to sort of discuss in future shows, they can just go to the contact for Facebook and send me a message via Facebook. That's fine, and I'll get back to you. But I just really quickly want to add that vitamin D and your omega-3s are also really fantastic for reducing inflammation. So make sure you're getting your krill oil, flaxseed or hempseed oil, or fish oils, and getting plenty of sunshine.
Oh, my God, so much good stuff. So, please visit truthnews.com.au. We'll see you next week. Have a glorious week and peace out.
Bibles for America is offering absolutely free a unique study Bible called the New Testament Recovery Version. The New Testament Recovery Version has over 9,000 footnotes that explain what the Bible says verse by verse, helping you to know God and to know the meaning of life. Order your free copy today from Bibles for America. Call us toll-free at 888-551-0102 or visit us online at bfa.org. This translation is highly accurate and it comes with over 13,000 cross-references, plus charts and maps and an outline for every book of the Bible. This is truly a Bible you can understand. To get your free copy of the New Testament Recovery Version, call us toll-free at 888-551-0102. That's 888-551-0102. Or visit us online at bfa.org.